Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, hello. Hello again. This is Peter Breggin, and it is the last Wednesday of the month, so it's open mic. If you are listening on July 31st, 2019 at 4 p.m. New York time, you can call in. Actually, you can call in any Wednesday at 4 p.m. and talk to me. But today is the day I reserve for conversations about anything at all. And so give a call. Tell me what you think. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Invite somebody else to call in and talk to you. You know, just use me today as an opportunity to reflect. I'm kind and gentle. I don't think I've ever embarrassed any of my callers. So relax and do that on 888-874-4888. I really welcome people to call in. And my wonderful assistant, Ian, has just let me know that he's put up a really enlightening, helpful, inspiring new research. He's put it up on Breggin.com. It's part of our daily breaking news. Listen, we have daily breaking news every single day on Breggin.com, Breggin.com. Daily breaking news. So the research is about the superiority of psychotherapy to drugs in young people. Well, who would have guessed? Not the pharmaceutical industry, not the FDA. A lot of people wouldn't have guessed that. Not any of your university health centers. But it's true, folks. A meaningful conversation with somebody who has some wisdom and experience, somebody who you can trust, somebody that, you know, you want to talk to about your life, is far better than poisoning your brain and limiting your resources, your mental resources, to reduce your suffering. It's just far, far better to be enhanced and enlightened with a caring, thoughtful relationship. And that's what you should look for when you go looking for a counselor or a therapist. Look for somebody who's caring, somebody who's got some wisdom. Not somebody who's perfect, because there's nobody there like that, anywhere. Really look for somebody that you like and that likes you, and who at the end of the hour is hoping you're going to feel better, maybe not over your troubles. If you have really deep ones going back to childhood, you might, you know, want a longer therapy. But somebody whose very presence is helping you every day that you see him. Use the same model for finding love relationships. Find somebody whose presence every day, despite the ups and downs that afflict all of us, but someone who every day, whose presence makes you happier, makes you feel better, gives you more confidence, sparks love in your heart. It is there, folks. It is truly there. And I'm going to talk about love today. And I'm hoping some of you will call in. I'm speaking, I'll tell you what I'm speaking from or about. As I was walking from my kitchen to my home office, I passed by a friend and housekeeper who keeps us cleaner than we would keep ourselves in our home. Our housekeeper, she's a fine young woman and mother. And she said, good luck today with what you're saying. And I thought, I'm going to need good luck because I'm talking off the top of my head. And then I said, but you know, I hope I'll talk from the bottom of my heart. From the bottom of my heart. Because there's no other way really to talk with any meaning at all about what our lives are about. And our lives, to a great extent, are about love. And I tell you that from the very, very bottom of my heart. Before talking further about that, this is the Dr. Peter Breggin Show. You can stay in touch with me best by going to Breggin.com and looking at our frequent alerts, which come out 1, 2, 3 times a week usually. It varies on whether I have something I feel impelled to alert you about. We have an app that you can get, a PRN app. I guess you go get it like people get apps. I'm so slowly learning to do things like that. We have an archives on the website of all of my shows. It'll even tell you how many people have watched it through the most direct means. But that's a lot more people are watching through means we can't calculate. We have a 775-6850. Listen live on the phone. 712-775-6850. But for today, I know it's fascinating to listen to me and listen to my guests, and people get, they don't even want to disrupt by bringing up a question. But give a call. Give a call and ask me about anything that's on your mind. And I'm going to talk about love, what it is, what's important about it. But let me start by what it isn't. Love is not a lot of suffering. That's what happens in relationships. That's what happens between lovers, friends, sometimes between parents and children. We hurt each other, but love is not about suffering. Love is about really being happy in the presence of another human being. Love for people, you can have love for dogs, love for nature, love for God. They all have the same principle, I believe, that there's a joyness in the awareness of that other person, just being with them, seeing them, sensing them, talking with them, sound of their voice. And it could be a good friend. This doesn't even have to be romantic love. People have good friends whose just presence just enlivens them and makes them feel happier and better. So love is good. Love is something we generate from within us. Now, when we're little, and this is really a bummer, we can't thrive without love. We are in desperate need of love. If we haven't had enough, like I did, of creating love in relationships beyond anything that was available to me in my childhood. And you could do that. I learned that families hug by one of the earliest TV shows. TV was just coming out. Probably when I was 10, there was hardly anybody with a TV. But by the time I got to junior high school, there was the beginning of TV. And that's where I saw people hugging, families. There was not a lot. My family, my big brother, my mother, my father, they didn't know much about it. They didn't have very much experience. They had worse, including my brother, older brother, they had worse childhoods than I did. So in the beginning, we're desperate for love. But that won't make it in our adulthood. And this is an issue that just plagues a lot of us. We go through our adult life looking for love and looking instead of looking for someone to give love to. We do that because we're wounded. We feel empty. We feel lost. We feel lonely. maybe even in a marriage, maybe in a single, maybe with friends, maybe without, but we feel lonely because we're not connecting. Well, the answer isn't the immediate reflex, which is, oh, find somebody to love me. First of all, anybody who finds us to love when we are depressed has got serious problems. I mean, when I was very depressed, women who were full of life, I'm sure, took one look at me and thought, well, we may have something going for him. I mean, he seems to be doing well in school or whatever. But they're not likely to see a source of joy. Love, when you're a source of love, you're a source of joy and happiness and encouragement. And so I didn't end up with women like that or friends like that. Only my dogs. Only my dogs. So get ready to find someone to love. That's who you want to be. That's who you want to be. Somebody who's out there looking around, trying to get love. And remember that when you meet someone or you find something to do and it warms your heart, makes you feel good and strong, then you're on the right track. Don't go to cure anybody. Don't go to fix anybody's depression. Not in your personal life as your partner. Actually imagine that you, by giving love, will attract people. Just look around with love. Look around with a twinkle. Talk to people and just encourage yourself to be interested in them. See that everything you say is going to help them enjoy the life moment they're sharing with you. Make this a way of life. It's hard. I know. I mean, I don't do it on my radio show nearly as much as I could because I'm talking about these dark and difficult things. And maybe I'll inspire myself today. Try to more harder to find a way to make the tough stuff enjoyable. Now, and the way it's meaningful to me is that I care about people, and this tough stuff is about liberating folks, liberating people to have good lives. Well, we've got a lot of callers in, and themselves, if they hang on, I think we will fill the day readily, but it's not sure. You might still want to keep calling in. I'm not necessarily going to go in order of receiving the calls. I do want to address somebody who sounds like they may be getting themselves in trouble. Meg in Buffalo, number 5 on our list. Are you there? I get to Meg, a little out of order here. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Meg.
Hi, yes.
Hi. You sent in a notice that made me want to talk to you. You said you're someone who just stopped taking your meds suddenly?
No. It's not me. It's actually my son, my 33-year-old son.
Yeah. I can imagine that because people who stop taking their meds suddenly are usually not on top of things enough to call in for help.
Yeah, exactly. So, and to be fair, I've read your books years and years, and followed you, listened to many of the programs, and all very helpful. But there is always that situation that I can't make someone do something. And but my son right now is living with me at our lovely farm. Very bucolic. We have a couple of dogs, a cat. There's no stress here.
How old is he?
He's 33.
Okay, go ahead.
And he is diagnosed, he's got the diagnosis, whatever, for what it's worth, of schizoaffective bipolar. And he was taking Thorazine and Seroquel at night. He's been living with us for about 3 months and 3 or 4 months. Because, to be honest with you, doctor, we just weren't happy with what was available to him, and we just felt like we could just wanted to bring him home and just love him, you know.
So, and what's happened, Meg?
Well, you know, he wanted to come. It was his choice too, and just in the matter of a couple of months, he's kind of gotten very isolating, just staying upstairs, kind of, you know, pretty symptomatic about you know, aliens and things like that. And so this week he just told me that he's, you know, he was kind of, like, I know you're anti-med, so I feel kind of even funny talking about this, but he was taking the medication, and I can't honestly say that the medication was really touching any of this, you know, symptomatic type stuff, and maybe it was causing it. And, but stopping, you know, stopping suddenly, which he told me that he just stopped.
When did he tell you this?
He just told me this the other day, just yesterday, the day before yesterday.
So he's 1 or 2 days. I mean, it's important to get very specific. He's 1 or 2 days off of Thorazine and what other medicine
Seroquel.
Did you say? Seroquel?
Yes.
And how long has he been on drugs consistently?
He's been on the Thorazine for probably about a year. And the Seroquel, he takes 200 megs of that at night just to sleep.
And how much Thorazine is he taking?
He was taking 200 megs once a day, but doctor just upped him to 3 times a day. But I don't, to be honest, that hasn't been very long, like maybe 2 weeks.
Do you think that's why he quit? That maybe that raise to 300 was somehow causing him so much distress that he just quit?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't know. I don't know. And I can ask him.
Does he talk
that,
with you, Meg? I mean, often someone in his condition, you know, he's not really very talkative with family. But does he talk with you? Could you have a conversation with him about what's he feeling having come off these drugs so abruptly? That would be the most important thing you might be able to do for him, yes?
Right. That's been what I've been trying to do the last day or two, and not to freak out. And he's just resting. You know, he's just resting, and we're not seeing anything. You know, he eats and he rests. And, you know, and he is still being seen he was in Buffalo Psych Center for about a year and about a year and a half, and was very resistant to, you know,
therapy.
Didn't do well there, and then he wasn't.
Does he have a therapist, Meg?
He does. He has a therapist with our county, but he's resisting going to those meetings, doesn't like to talk to anyone. And I've met the fella. He's a good guy. Nice.
Do you think,
very empathetic.
Let me see if I can get down to some areas I might be able to help you in. Do you think he would be willing to go to the therapist with you? Or
he would let me go in.
Father in that? By the way, is there a father in the house? Any other people in the house?
Yes, my husband lives here too. He's gone a lot with his job. But, you know, he's in and out, and he's good. Yeah. We're all good. We're in a good place.
Well, first, let me say that if your son has been on meds for all this time, I'd be worried about his condition coming off so abruptly. And the most important thing you could do would be to find a way to stay in touch with him to see if he is going to have an emergency where he gets very upset and perhaps destructive to his family or to himself. because it's a somebody who's had so much difficulty and so much hospitalization, so much medication. This could be a tremendous trial for him. So you might start by asking him something really simple, like, son, I don't love your meds either, but I'm a little worried about this abrupt stop. Did you stop because the doctor raised your meds so much? Just ask him.
Right.
Because maybe we could think about how you're doing and talk with you, and I could maybe, if you would let me, go with you to your therapist. Because it's still time to go back on some of those meds to try to do a slower withdrawal.
Right.
So check and see if he took an overload and see if he would be amenable to talking with you about it, because this could be an emergency time and you need to be prepared to just, take him somewhere if he needs help. I'm not saying lock him up involuntarily. I think that often if somebody's in trouble and a family member cares, they'll just get some temporary help. Well, be prepared to spend all your time with him. Are you free to just take care of him if he goes through a tough time?
Oh, yeah. We're here for him.
Are you in the home all the time?
I'm in the home. Yeah, we're in the home together.
You don't work?
I don't work right now, no.
Okay.
And
so,
be aware
of his having these difficulties, that he could be going into a serious time. Try to use it to build relationship with him. That's the most important gift you can give him.
Mm-hmm.
And ask him if he'd see his therapist with you tomorrow or whenever. And be really alert for him needing some emergency care. Anything else that I can help you with about this? Any other question?
I guess maybe what would be some of the behaviors that I would be really looking for?
Well, anything that makes you the slightest bit suspicious that he's feeling violent toward himself or other people.
Okay.
It's not like you have a consenting adult living with you. You have somebody who's really injured and probably will listen to you if you say you need to be somewhere other than in the house right now.
Right.
So just keep that in mind. Any drastic change at all, any serious change at all, that kind of withdrawal could lead to anything. Worsening of the psychosis. It's not likely to bring immediate improvement. It's more likely to cause a problem. So that would be my concern for you. And for you to feel that as a parent, you can take over for him if he needs it, because his brain right now is probably not in much of a place to make rational decisions. Does that make sense, Meg?
It makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
If you're up to it, call in on the radio any of the days, Monday through Friday, and check in with me. Even if I've got a really interesting guest on, tell the folks at PRN that I'd like to hear from you. If you want to call in again, tell me how he's doing.
Okay, thanks a lot. We're just watching him, and he's resting. And his liaison from Buffalo Psych Center will call me tomorrow. So I'll let her know what he's doing.
Yeah, let them know. That's good. I hadn't even thought about that, you making, a contact in advance. So do that, because this could be a tough time.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Good to talk with you, Meg. Bye-bye now.
Okay, thank you. Carry on. Carry on the good work.
I will. Let me go back to take people in order now. You can see I thought that I was dealing with a person who was having herself the medical emergency, but it turns out that's a medical emergency, folks. And I'm against involuntary treatment. I have never, ever locked up one of my patients, although I have the power to. In my entire career, except when I was in my training, had no choice. If I'd refused, the training would have ended on the spot. But I do believe that, when people are in need, their families should intervene, and people in that condition usually will respond to what they're asked to do. The risk then is that you're dealing with a facility that will take control. So and that's not good. So it's just the mental health system doesn't provide us great alternatives, not really great ones. And if you've got any additional ideas to what I was telling Meg, please call in. Let's go to the first caller, Denise in Minnesota. Something about a holistic recommendation. Denise?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much, Dr. Bergen. It's so nice to speak with you. I have learned about you through a holistic consultant, and she and her team spoke very highly of you. For the last 3 weeks, I've been starting to read your book and on your website.
Which book? There's a lot of them. Which book are you reading?
Yes, there's a lot of information. Thank you for all that you
do. Denise, which book are you reading?
I'm reading currently Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal.
Well, good. Okay. Good. It's a pretty new book. And tell me more.
Okay. So my son, he's 15 years old. He'll be 16 in about a month or so, September 22nd. And in September of last year, he went into sophomore in high school. He had a nervous breakdown. The school called me, and I knew something was going on, and I had called the school that same day. And they said that, you know, basically he's not responding or what have you. So they told me that I needed to take him in and have him checked out. So I took him to his primary doctor, and she told me to send him to emergency. So we went to emergency, and basically, to make a long story short, they ended up keeping him in the mental ward for about 3 weeks. Initially, when I would see him, he would eat or drink from me a little, but they would only allow me to see him for 1 hour. By the time we got the rules changed, every day that I would go to see him, he would decrease. And about the fifth or sixth day, he wouldn't eat or drink from me either. But the second day I had came to see him, he was eating and drinking, and he begged me not to leave. But visiting hours was only for 1 hour. So anyway, 3 weeks later, they said that he had catatonia and put him on Zyprexa and lorazepam. After about a week, they put him on lorazepam, and he snapped out of whatever he was in, and he asked where was he at, what was going on, and we explained, and so they put him on lorazepam and Zyprexa. He stayed on Zyprexa, lorazepam. They had me taper him off of that, and then a month to 3 months later, he didn't want to take it anymore because he said he thought everybody was looking at him and he didn't feel good. So I told him that he shouldn't stop taking it, but we should go to see the psychiatrist, but he stopped anyway. And then after that, now I know he was going through withdrawal symptoms. He started to be a manic. I didn't realize, but he wasn't really sleeping, and when I would ask him to do something, it's like he would go to do the same thing immediately. I didn't realize that it was withdrawal symptoms. So anyway, he kind of lost control, did a lot of mischievous things and different things. He ended up going into the hospital again. They changed his med to, they added Thorazine. And so he was then on Thorazine and Zyprexa. And then he ended up going into the hospital again. And the reasons why I didn't really know what to do, and I didn't have the consultant at the time. I didn't know about you. He wasn't able to go to sleep at night, so he would stay up, and then he would sneak out of the house and go to bars at 16. I don't know how he would get in, but anyway, that's another story. And drink, and, you know, he was just doing all kinds of things. And
Denise, what's his current situation? So I can get to a point where
his current situation
I can try to be useful. Yeah.
Right now, he's on lithium. He's on lorazepam, lithium, 300 milligrams in the morning, 600 at night. Lorazepam, 200 milligrams in the morning. I mean, 2 milligrams in the morning, 2 milligrams at night. And then Benadryl, 50 milligrams at night. So my questions are this. Number one, as I look for a psychiatrist to help with medication management and hopefully to get him off eventually would be the goal, if he's having a manic episode, what things could I do? My second question was, I saw a show where there was a Gail Tosh, and she practiced in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm in Minnesota. So I was wondering if you could send a message to her to see if she had any openings. And then my third question and last question is, when he is off of the medication, how long after could he have withdrawal symptoms or side effects? Those are my three questions.
Well, first, about my calling somebody I don't know on your behalf, that may not work out as well as you think. My views.
No, doctor. This is Gail. She was on your show.
I don't think she sees private patients, does she?
Oh, okay.
But she's not in Minnesota. Where is she in Minnesota?
She was in Rochester. She talked about how she was helping people in Rochester on your show last year. I think it was, I went to the archives. It was one of your shows. She was in Rochester, Minnesota.
Okay. I think you should just go ahead and call her. Tell her you talked to me on the radio show and you like what I'm doing. And does she have a recommendation for someone for you to see? Because she's going to be able to tell you much more about who's available or not than I am. So just call her. She'll be in the phone book.
Yeah, she's not. The numbers are previous employment, not current.
So you haven't been able to locate her? Well, send me a message to BreganLive@hotmail.com for me to get in touch with her and let me see what I can find out about where she is and what she's doing.
Thank you so much.
So that's the first thing. The second thing, talking about the medications on the air is virtually impossible. That's very unpredictable about how long you should leave him on the meds and how long coming off of them. It just doesn't work out very well. You have psychiatric drug withdrawal, and you'll see how much it depends on your relationship with him and what he's thinking and feeling. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Who does the family consist of?
It consists of his father, who actually lives in a different state, but is involved. Myself, his grandmother, my sister would be the immediate people in the family.
Who's he closest to?
He's closest to me.
Okay. Do you have any idea what happened to him that might have precipitated in him this disastrous reaction?
At the time, he had needed to complete some courses from his freshman year. So he was in high school during the day, second year, and then at night he was taking courses for courses that he had not completed before. So I think that it was too much for him. And he was
so stressed. Now he's way behind. So he's facing a higher mountain to climb.
Yeah. And so it keeps getting worse and worse. Yeah.
Yeah. So does he have a therapist?
He does have a therapist. Very good therapist. He does not know about you, but I've spoken about you, and he said he would be interested in getting more information about you. So hopefully he follows through with that. But
yeah, well, I'm not available to help people who aren't, you know, in the Ithaca area. So I think you've got a really good source to look for good people. The single most important thing for a young person is the support of his family, the love and support of his family. And I would do everything you can to wrap the whole family around him and to meet with the therapist as often as you can. If I have a 15, or is he 16 now?
He's 15 now.
Still 15. All right. So if I have someone that young that I'm working with, I see a member of the family every time they come.
Okay.
I get involved with the family. And one of the things that, on a practical level, it might give him a little hope would be to figure out how to tell him that life doesn't end if he stops schooling temporarily, that there's always a way back in regard to school. Young people don't realize that. There are a million ways back to school. Some people end up taking a college curriculum for high schoolers, or they homeschool, or they go to one of the local alternative schools. I mean, there's so many ways that a 15-year-old can take a break and then find a plan to work himself back into school. There are even school programs in Ithaca that you can take, you know, at junior colleges to get your GED. So there's all kinds of things available. So let him know his life is not frittering away and he's not losing it all because he's not in school. I think that sounds like one of the keys. And to bring him back in a very kind and gentle way into schooling eventually. And I would just keep him in as much touch as possible by phone and together and at therapy sessions with you. And if the therapist is uncomfortable with that, some therapists are just uncomfortable with that. I just found that it was so important. I learned to get comfortable with working with the whole family. And it's just so much better. It's so far superior if you have a responsible parent involved. And if he's not comfortable, find a second therapist who will work with you and him. Maybe check out marriage and family therapists. Your state may license marriage and family therapists. So do those kinds of things. Get the family wrapped around him. I can't give medication advice, not only because I can't practice that kind of medicine on the air, but also because it's unknowable at this distance and even where you are. But in general, he will do better if weaned off, in my experience, the meds. But I can't guarantee that, you know, but that's my experience. It's very slowly weaning off the meds. But the key is the family support. And like my previous, I was going to say guest caller, you know, feel free to call back into the show, especially on the last Wednesday of the month, but anytime. And I'll definitely be able to respond on the, you know, on the last Wednesdays of the month. Okay. Anything else before I say goodbye?
Yes. How long does the withdrawal effect tend to happen? Could it happen a month or 2 months after, or no?
People can have very lengthy withdrawal effects because sometimes it's not withdrawal, it's just it's injury. So if the drugs have harmed him in some way, he's got to recover from that, not just from withdrawal. Tell me what you're thinking so I can answer it more directly. Tell me what scenario you're imagining.
The biggest issue that we're having is his inability to sleep and his manic behavior is the most difficult thing when he is when he was not taking medications.
That is the most difficult thing there is in anyone's practice, is what to do about somebody who's manic outside the hospital, at home. And, you know, people can do it sometimes. It depends so much on the degree of the problem. But how does that relate to the drug withdrawal question?
So basically, I've gone part time on my job, and my whole goal is to assist him because I can see what the drugs are doing to him. They are
Well, the first goal is for you to get so involved in his life again that he hardly recognizes you, just to find ways for you and anybody else in the family who loves him to really start visiting him. Is he in the house now, at home?
Yes.
Have people come and visit. See that he gets a lot of love from the family. Make sure his dad's coming enough. Welcome his dad, despite whatever you've been through in the past. His dad is good for him. And get involved with his therapy the most you can, and if you can't, get a therapist who will do it as a second therapist, even if it's not weekly. Those are the things you need to do, and there's no telling what's going to happen about him and his meds and whether he can even at this point be managed at home without something to quiet him down. In my work, I don't do that. I just try my best to work without the meds, but then sometimes my patient will see another doctor who gives the meds. So, and I say, okay, if that's what you want, now let's get back to work again. So the main thing is for you to be there working with him. So check in again, okay? Let me hear from you again.
Let
me go to, let's see.
Thank you.
Randy in California is struggling with another similar issue to all of this. Randy,
yes.
Are you there? Caller number 3?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Hi, yes.
Oh, clear
hi.
Thank
bell.
You so much for taking my call. I have a situation that I have researched for many years. What's happened is I did not get... Although I suffered my whole life with different mental disorders, I was also very successful in television and have won awards. But at 40 years old, I took off time and I got officially diagnosed, and I was given Effexor for OCD ruminations. I took that Effexor, a couple of other drugs off and on, but that Effexor was consistently taken for 15 years until 2012, and I thought, you know what? I really would like to get off this. I want to kind of be a little bit more of myself again, a little more creative and intense and passionate and all those things that I was, a very colorful person. And the doctor at the time, he titrated me off the Effexor over about 4.5 months. Well, the withdrawals that I suffered, first of all, it's a miracle I'm still alive. I went through 24/7 terror, fight or flight. I felt like I was in such extreme danger I could not function, and nothing was going on around me. This wasn't delusional or what have you. I have no schizophrenic or hallucinatory issues, but it wouldn't stop. And he kept trying medication after medication after medication. He did not do what the FDA said, which is, you know, put the person right back on the drug and then titrate slower or what have you. Nonetheless, it took me years of all kinds of it went into my throat and I was having throbbing. I have not functioned well for 7 years. I have been in a hospital because my daughter was afraid I was going to kill myself. I've cut myself a lot with razors. I lost my career. I've lost my life. I've lost my personality.
Did all of this start during the withdrawal? Were you functioning on a good level before the withdrawal?
Both my parents were not here, or I would have had somebody to talk to. But I pretended that I would act in front of other people, and I would pretend that I was okay and functioning. And I was doing some editing at the time, so I was in a room by myself. But it was unbelievable. He not long after that, he did put me on Klonopin, which didn't help a lot. But unfortunately, I'm now dependent on it. After about
so, Randy, you're on Klonopin now?
Yes, and he did put me back on Effexor in 2013, an Effexor XR this time, and I was on 300 milligrams of that.
Right now, though, Randy, what are you on?
Right now, I was able to do a little bit of a Prozac bridge and go down. I'm on 150 milligrams Effexor XR. I was diagnosed with PTSD because of my withdrawals. So I was having screaming nightmares, so I'm on Prazosin, and I take about 1.5 Klonopin a day. I take a tiny piece of Lamictal, I don't even know why anymore, and I have gone off the Prozac bridge plan because I'm on 10 milligrams Prozac, but I wanted to stop taking it. After about 6 months, I gained a huge amount of weight, and my thyroid went up. So right now I'm on the 150 Effexor. I don't like paying Pfizer for a drug that has destroyed me and doesn't help me. I don't know. One quick question is, my doctor isn't real positive about my psychiatrist about tapering me with beads. But I don't want to do the Prozac bridge anymore, or am I just stuck on Effexor for the rest of my life? I never recovered. I lost my career. I'm on disability. I work as a cashier now, and I've won several awards. You would know one of the television shows that I worked on for many, many years. I'm 63 now,
Let me just get very clear again. And while you were faking it a lot, you nonetheless really have gone way downhill since the attempt at withdrawal.
What the withdrawal started. I was on the phone with suicide hotlines. It started soon after I stopped the final dose of Effexor, but I never recovered. But everything I have researched on protracted withdrawal, anhedonia, loss of interest, I have no ability to feel happy. Went to my daughter's wedding last year, had no feelings. My son graduated college few months ago, no feelings.
Well, you're still on a fair amount of meds.
Right, but I'm...
That's part of the issue. But first, just the lessons for everyone. The single most important principle of withdrawal, unless there's an emergency like severe tardive dyskinesia, in which you try to maybe hospitalize the person and get them off, or other acute emergencies, serotonin syndrome, neuroleptic malignant syndrome, and you need hospitalization for those things. You basically don't want to withdraw a person or yourself faster than is comfortable.
Right, but the psychiatrist...
Let me finish up for the folks, okay?
I'm sorry.
Thank you. So if you are treating somebody, and we have, treating people who listen to the show, or if you are coming off a medication or know somebody who's coming off a medication... You have to be in control, not the prescribing doctor, in terms of slowing it down. the prescriber doesn't get to rush you. The prescriber has to learn, and you might have to teach them because this is news to them, many of them, that you want to go at a pace that's comfortable for you and go at that pace. And that results in the vast majority of people, in my experience, in my practice, coming off, if it's only one or two meds, without any terrible problems, because we just go real slow. At their pace is the most important part of it. The slowness isn't even it. It's at their pace, what they're comfortable with, what they can handle. Randy, you're in such a complex situation. I don't know what advice I can give you.
Well, here's my question. I guess my main question.
Let me finish, dear.
Okay.
Other than to see if you can straighten out your meds with your doctor and get yourself back to one, whatever one you think is helping, and try, and then when you're feeling stable, try a slow withdrawal at your pace. You're taking several different meds. Try to figure out what one you think you need to maintain you. It's probably the Effexor because it's the one that's throwing your brain out of whack. And if you can get back to the Effexor with careful supervision and going at your pace, do that. And then when you feel ready, try a very slow withdrawal from Effexor. If you want to try switching to Prozac, you already know about that. You could try that as a method. I usually withdraw the person from the drug they're on, but certainly you can make switches like that to longer acting drugs because they're easier. I think that's most of what I have for you, Randy. Well, I'm getting near the end, so I'm going to go to another guest now.
The future. Is there a chance that you can get brain scans or help for anything where there's permanent damage done, permanent, you know, brain changes and neurotoxicity per Dr. Stuart Shipko, who told me he thinks that's what I have? Is there anything you can do in the future, just real quick?
The most important things we can do for any kind of brain injury are good health. I mean, that is the single most important thing. That means mild physical activity, intellectual activity, social activity, and eating a plant-based diet. Those are the things that I
know. Okay, so no brain scans and finding out what doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
No brain scans or anything to find out about neurotoxicity or what can be done to fix that or...
No, they're not going to help with that. You might get some injury showing up on an MRI, but let's hope no. Let's hope not. Let's hope you don't have anything showing up.
Right, if they did, they couldn't do anything anyway, right? And that's
not directly to the scan or because of the scan, no. It's about good health mostly. But you also need to be talking with the... finding some doctors you can trust to talk about this, all this directly.
I've been to 5 psychiatrists.
Okay, I'm going to say bye now, Randy. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you for your time.
Bye. Arlene, who's number 6, she has a medication question. She's in New York somewhere. Are you there, Arlene?
Hi, doctor. How are you?
Hi. Would you ask me a really quick question? We're just about at the end of the show.
Sure.
And my other caller, I'm
going
to say to call back another time.
Okay. I was on an enormous amount of drugs because of a ski accident. I kicked all the drugs in 2006. It took me 2 years. I became the vegan. All of a sudden, I got some news. My brother had a heart aneurysm. And I became very depressed this past Christmas. And I started taking ashwagandha. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Well, ashwagandha is an herb that has very strong effects if you take enough. It's like a benzodiazepine effect.
Ooh.
So it calms you down, but it's affecting your neurotransmitters, and withdrawal from it needs to be done cautiously.
I'm taking 750 milligrams every night just to sleep with.
I have no idea what that translates into because I've only seen one or two people on ashwagandha.
Oh, but so I should try to get off.
You can check out for yourself.
I've been on it
that
since Christmas, doctor.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to come off it, you'll have to treat it like coming off a benzo. And you can find out how to do that in my book, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal.
Come off slowly, cut the dose down
very, very slowly. Don't let yourself get over anxious. Anxiety will be one of the withdrawal symptoms. Insomnia can be one of the withdrawal symptoms. Just respect yourself as you come off. But you really should get some help. If I were you, I'd try to get a medical consult on coming off of it.
Ashwagandha, and I thought it was
herbs can be very powerful. Many herbs are poisons. Many psychiatric drugs are herbs. Marijuana is an herb, very potent and dangerous. Being an herb does not mean it isn't a serious medication.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
God bless you,
hey,
doctor.
Folks, I'm getting near the end. I want to thank everybody for calling in. And I didn't get to my last guest. And next, she might call in again. I think it's a she. And make her question a little clearer so that I can take it. Meanwhile, it's wonderful to be doing the show. Wonderful to be having so many callers come in. Let me know what you're thinking about the direction of this show. Would you like more days like this where I answer questions? Would you like more days with exciting guests? Why aren't people calling in much when I have guests? They save it up just for the once a week. Is it because you don't want to disrupt? Let me know. Let me know what's going on. Love you. Thank you for being there and in my life, however far away. Bye-bye now.